Blog Talk Radio.
All matter is merely energy condensed to a slow vibration. We are all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. There is no such thing.
You got me, Jeremy? Jeremiah.
Dave, good evening.
Oh, we're there.
Good evening, Dave. We're there.
Can you hear me?
You. Yes, I can hear you, and I think everybody else can as well. Everybody in the chat room hearing Dave now?
Can you hear me, Brother John?
Yeah.
And my brothers and sisters around the world.
Okay, I'm just going to bring in Laura. There we go. So we're calling Laura just now on the magic Skype phone. Skype is just a thing. So, Dave, do you want to give an announcement while we're getting on?
Yes, tonight we are pleased and honored to have the lovely and vivacious Miss Laura Magdalene Eisenhower as our esteemed guest tonight. And we pray tonight that we can bring forth information that will awake you, perhaps terrify you, and nevertheless enlighten you in ways you've never been enlightened before.
Keep going.
And that's just for beginners.
Okay. Hello?
There you are.
Yay.
There she is.
Hi, guys. You kind of sound like you're underwater, but that's okay.
That'll settle down after a while.
Okay. Do I sound clear?
You're absolutely
crystal. You sound
crystal.
Very clear.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is most of the time I'll be hanging back. And Dave and you will converse, and then I'll butt in every so often to say something stupid, okay?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think what I'd really love to hear is the stuff that you guys have in common, apart from being in a soul family, of course, but to explore that kind of area, it's time. So, thank you very much, I'm just going to step back and listen to you guys.
Okay, great.
Laura, I'm honored and delighted that you accepted our invitation to join this wacky world of ours. Pardon me, at least this wacky world on Pig Radio. Can you hear me?
Well, it suits me because I'm wacky. Yeah. I feel right home in the wacky world.
Well, like someone says, what kind of world do I live in? Unless I live in a paranormal, normal world. What kind of world do you live in? Now, I have a question someone asked me to ask you. Did you ever meet your great-grandfather?
No, I did not, but I met his wife, Mamie. I visited her a few times at the farm, and around the age of 4 or 5 was the time I think was the oldest I was when I was with her, maybe a little bit older because I have pretty vivid memories when she was laying in bed and was sick. But no, I never met great-grandfather, just my great-grandmother, Mamie.
She was quite a lady.
She was.
All right, now.
It was.
I want you to take a couple of deep breaths. Let them in and out, and relax, because I'm not going to bite too bad. I mean, talk to you too hard. Now, I want you to think back as far back as you can think back about when you were taken into the projects.
Uh-huh.
And how old were you when you felt you were someplace you shouldn't have been?
Well, I mean, it was different than, you know, these other types of projects, because I was recruited in 2006, but there had been attention on me my whole life. So, in a sense, yeah, I was targeted from a very young age, but when I was confronted and an agent was sent to bring me into the program, it was in 2006. And I didn't know that he was sent to find me. I thought that we had randomly met, and I had become engaged to him, and he had been talking about, you know, this trip to go to Mars and you know, leaving the planet for good, target date 2012, and that, you know, there were all these reasons for it, and, you know, things, different technologies that he mentioned, different names that he mentioned, that he was dealing with, he mentioned, and I didn't take it that seriously in the beginning until I tried to get myself away from it, and the forces really started to come out of the woodwork as far as how, you know, deep these projects were and how, you know, much a part of the shadow government, the three-letter organizations that they were, you know, connected with. But, you know, the level of attack or attention on me, I felt, you know, ever since I was, you know, a very small kid, you know, 5, 10 years old.
That is
and
interesting.
And it was a lot of things.
Go ahead.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, just kind of, you know, things that were just some sort of weaponry used on me that seemed to kick me out of my physical body, and really throw me off, and just all sorts of strange occurrences that I just had to kind of isolate and just kind of work on surviving, really. I mean, for a good 20 years, it was very hard to keep myself alive for a number of reasons. Like, my day consisted of trying to stay alive. I was having a good day if I went to bed alive. So.
Well, thank you for, I mean, that's different than what most of the people that we're aware of has happened. At least you're the first one that's really come forward with this information on how they try to pull you into the projects.
Right.
And believe me, I have cold chills going up and down my whole body, and you're opening another door for me personally that has lights on behind it. Now I just got to figure out how to find a doorknob to open this door up and see what's there. But that'll happen at a later time. But thank you for that. What is the most exciting part? All right, now, just stop and think for a second. What is the most exciting part of this whole adventure you've been on that you personally found exciting?
Let's see. Gosh, there's so many different elements to it. I mean, a lot of it. I think when I really started to tap into my dreams and I started to dig really deep, and then I knew that I was onto something, and I started to really put pieces together and make sense out of things that really traced back to really ancient times where I have a larger picture, you know, behind these programs, what these agendas were. And when I really started to kind of figure out what was happening, I was able to get kind of two steps ahead of it all, where they always thought they were two steps ahead of me because of their time travel technologies and remote viewing and, you know, just general targeting, knowing where I was all the time without, you know, like, why would they know? How did they know? I guess I had tracking devices. But when I really started to clue into it and I really tapped into my own story and my own, you know, inner power and my own will and my, you know, what I'm passionate about, what I was born knowing that I'm here to do, the strength that kind of came out of me and my just, you know, on a heart level, just really just wanting to break free and just kind of get over it and take it to the next level, I started to get exciting because, in a way, I could see that I was jumping a timeline and I was moving myself from a catastrophic timeline or something that really went against my nature to something that has been so deeply ingrained in my soul. And when I could feel myself stepping into that and it felt so right, it really validated, you know, just all these intuitive notions that I had as a child. And just this understanding that I have a whole lot of confirmation for. So, I mean, it got exciting when all that I knew to be true was really making sense, and there was, you know, something that was opposed to the point where it forced me to come alive and step forward even more strongly. And it just really, you know, it's the anger and the rage that it awoke really was able to be channeled into the transformation and the breaking free. And then it got excited when I realized the attack started to, and I was starting to be able to get into my body and actually heal and then actually make connections with people that have bizarre stories, like, and just getting out of isolation. And just really just the fearlessness that I feel is the most exciting part, because I just, there's something that is beyond, you know, there's no fear of being harmed or fear of death, even if that's part of their plan. I don't even care. So I think it's just exciting to be free regardless of the threats.
Wow. That is, what a way to start the show. Okay, now, let's flip the coin over. What was the scariest adventure you've had so far?
Oh my gosh, I don't even know where to begin. Well, I was stuck in the mountains and freezing, you know, 20, 30 below, really being kind of attacked and not have to survive. But then, you know, in the greatest moments of pain and fear or, you know, down in suffering, there's always something that would just kind of come and relieve me or just sort of assist me. And it was just a very, like, divine presence. I mean, it wasn't like I was channeling anything, but it was like something was with me, really just guiding my thought processes and guiding my creative energy to just sort of, you know, lift me out of these struggles. And even though, I mean, I just kind of, like, found this comfortable insanity with it all. It just kind of like, I let go of everything. But I think the scariest was, you know, the amount of times that, you know, they tried to kill me, you know, being strangled and also, you know, falling in love with this agent that I didn't know was sent to find me, and then realizing that I was going to lose him because they basically told him that if I wouldn't go with him, that they would, you know, kill him or, you know, that there was harm that was going to be done to his family. You know, there's just all these different death threats. And then they made it clear that basically, I either go with them or lose him, or he, you know, can't stay on Earth with me. And I started to really understand, like, how severe this was and that I had to lose somebody that I really did love. I mean, I had a very karmic relationship with them. That's why they picked us out, because they had the ability to see that we had a connection in the past and that if they could get to him before me, they could manipulate him and control him to drag me along. And so when I started to realize how severe this was and that I there was just really no way that I could really, you know, keep him with me, I think the scariest part was just that loss and that, you know. But I mean scary is two things. One is, you know, on a heart level, an emotional level, and then the other one is just fighting for your life. And, you know, having two small kids, being a mother of twins, you know, living out of cars and buses and just traveling the country and just really trying to run from these forces, that was pretty scary. I mean, it's just the whole thing was pretty. But at the same time, like I said, there was always this other force that, you know, I mean, as much as a lot of heart damage got done to my physical heart because of the stress and anxiety and intensity of it all, there's always something I could communicate to that just, you know, would just say you're almost done and would give me like a sense of purpose and that, you know, somehow I would follow through. And as a child, I was being prepared for this as far as, you know, being able to help create the positive timeline, and that, I was very well aware as a child that I was going to be, you know, pretty much annihilated, and I would have to kind of resurrect myself, and I would, you know, really go through a lot of different deaths. I think the scariest part was the isolation and knowing that I was just communicating with spirit, and there was nobody that was going to validate what I was picking up on and what I was going through, and I had to keep it quiet because I really did not want to be institutionalized, and so I just wanted to survive it to get to the point where, you know, I survived to tell the tale and that I would have some sort of proof and backup so that I could free myself and communicate it. Because the more I communicate, the more I'm healed. Like, the fact that I have a voice, I'm able to just set all this information free is actually healing, you know, a lot of the damage that got done. So I think the scariest part was just the isolation, really, you know. But like I said, I'm going off on so many tangents because the whole thing was freaky because it lasted, you know, my whole adulthood. I mean, it's finally gotten easier in the last, like, 2 years.
Wow. Okay. I have a...
Right, shall I ask the question? Or Shall I come in with the questions from the chat room? I think as a possible. So we've got some questions. We have a question from Luke. He's saying, can you please ask Laura if she knows of or has read the Mars Records? Now, I don't know anything about this. Do you know anything about this?
I've heard of them, and I think somebody sent them to me. And unfortunately, I haven't really had the chance. I'm not a very well-read person. I'll say that. It's not that I'm not educated. It's just I'm most consists of trying to just, you know,
stay alive, yeah.
Stay alive. and now I'm like able to really read, you know, about a lot of the stuff that I've been involved in, and you know, just yeah. But I haven't. There's still a lot farther I need to go. And Mars Records is certainly something I would love to just understand more. I've heard a lot about them.
So that's on the list, eh?
It's on the list.
And another question, which came earlier from a guest, number 226. He's saying, are you referring to the same two timelines that Andy Bashago refers to?
Well, I don't know. Andy and I are linked in very interesting ways. Project Pegasus identified me quantum access a year before I was born. Actually, we talk about it in my latest article called Unity Consciousness and the Collapse of the Military-Industrial Complex. Towards the bottom, Andy shares what he was told in Project Pegasus in 1972, a year before I was born. They identified me. And then we met, of course, this year, and all this information was coming out. And so when we talk and we share, we definitely have this sort of dialogue that's about the catastrophic timeline, the positive timeline. But, you know, him being a time traveler on a far, you know, different level than myself, was able to, you know, view things in the future, view things in the past, and see, you know, different timelines that there might have been, you know, many. For me, you know, I see many myself, but there's, you know, one that's definitely catastrophic in the sense of soul annihilation or just completely opposing, you know, what I feel organically born to do, which to me is catastrophic. You know, I'm not so concerned about disasters and death because to me it's just another movie, and when I dream at night I have the same, you know, it's just, I don't like to hang on to the movie so much. I just like to hang on to this holding my own soul and staying centered in my truth, regardless of what happens. If I have that, then I'm immortal and alive, like we all are. But, you know, as far as catastrophic to me means the loss of control or being manipulated and taken over. And so that's how I was viewing timelines. And as far as, you know, humanity goes, catastrophic timeline would mean, you know, New World Order and this whole, you know, what all these, you know, dark agendas have in mind. And so when I say the catastrophic, it would mean that compared to the positive timeline, which means ultimate liberation. So I think he's referring to the same thing when he, you know, uses the term catastrophic compared to positive. But as far as the energy streams or the particular, you know, stories along those timelines, I wouldn't say we exactly have it the same, except for the fact that we have been linked through quantum access and we are now collaborating together.
Right. So can I now have a question, and it's actually something that Dave and I were talking about last night. We were just chatting on the phone, and he was talking about how old Dave is, and that he was about five or so when Roswell occurred and all these things that happened in the 40s, and a flash came to me that perhaps Dave is alive because he's the link between the time before when the rift started and the time after the rift is healed. And he's like, and all of our lifetimes are like laces that will be pulled together to heal the broken timeline.
Oh, yeah.
Did that resonate with you?
Totally.
Yeah, because it was just something that we were just talking about last night, and that popped into my mind. And I thought, oh, wow, I better share that with Dave. So here I am sharing it with you as well, and, well, everybody else.
Let me interrupt for a minute.
On you go, Dave.
Last night when he popped that thought out, it was as though I was sitting in ice. Because after I've given that some thought today, it makes sense to me that I am the link between the two, or at least one of the links between the two. By the way, I'm 70 years old.
Uh-huh.
So it's hard to... I am an early indigo. There's no doubt about that. And they weren't talking about indigos till about 20 years ago. But when I look at how I am and how I have grown since I was a child, I've always known who I am. And I've been very pro-me about everything I've done. Much the same as you are very pro-you in the things that you've experienced and the things that Jeremy, he's experienced in his life. We are the start of what I call the psychic mental revolution here in this world.
Yes. I feel it.
How's that, Jeremy?
Yes. Excellent, Dave. This is what's happening. Okay, so we've got a question here. What is an early indigo? If I may take this question, this is... There's a large group of souls who are just incarnating at the moment, and they comprise two main groups. The first group is really the way showers, or the people who are kind of tidying up the mess from the last mess, and they are what we call the indigos, the soul energy ray. From the ancient wisdom is second ray. So these people are very independent minded. They don't take dogma. They won't listen to. They can't hear it. They don't understand it. And so that makes them slightly awkward and misfitty. They don't quite fit in with society because they challenge it all the time. Now a lot of people have said, oh, they've got ADD or ODD and all this stuff. But no, it's because they're spontaneous and you can't tell them what to do. You just cannot tell. If you have an indigo child, they know what to do. Just let them do it. Don't try and interfere because that's basically you're in the way of a divine force. And you know what would happen if you got in the way of a divine force.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to say that the three of us here in this room, according to my ray readings, we're all in this group. And so, Laura, you are officially deemed an indigo child, even though, you know, they might have named it by the time you got around.
Yeah, I didn't listen to anybody, and I didn't even go to school. I'm self-educated, and nobody could get me to do anything. No manipulation ever worked. And, you know, and I just learned everything I needed to learn about how to recover without, I avoided doctors and anything that would, you know, and shit. Yeah. I'm not saying that anybody's, you know, but you know what I call ADD? The real word for it is BTTTA, better things to think about.
Exactly.
Oh, Laura, that is absolutely priceless.
Exactly. And so what's happening is that, so this is the indigo. It's like a seam, and they're like the people who are going to help tidy up the mess last 2,000 years of dogma and glamour and all this rubbish, which is driven by the sixth ray of devotion and Piscean age and all this stuff. That's all going down the tubes now, and everything's being transformed by the new souls that are coming in who belong to the seventh ray of ceremonial order and magic. So this is all the new kids who are into rave music and rhythm and pulse and Africa and all this wonderful uplifting kind of thing, rather than doer old national anthems and loyalty and all of this stuff. It's like, think for yourself, make up your own religion, be spiritual. Collect with people, gather. All of these impulses are due to the seventh ray. Things like All You Need Is Love by the Beatles, the Live Aid, and all of these things. These are all signs of the incoming seventh ray, which is and the people who are generally, a lot of you in the chat room there, If you, particularly if you've come to my show, you'll know that you have seventh-ray souls, and that this is your part. You're part of the future. You're the formation of the future paradigm, and so this is it. I mean, when we're talking about this is the time that we've been waiting for. What we're doing right now, this interaction here, this is the moment you've been waiting for all of your lives. That's pretty profound, but anyway, here you go. Over to you guys. Follow that.
I am right now. I'm sitting here, just feeling like a sponge. Are you sure you two aren't interviewing me? Thomas in the chat
sure.
room asked. Let me see. Yeah. Then Spin Dave says, "What's the change between regular kids and indigos?" Well, indigos are different in that people think they're hard to get along with, but if you don't communicate with an indigo child on their level, that child says, "You know, sorry, I don't have time." I have a friend that lives here or used to live here that has, well, 4 or 5 years ago, her 6-year-old was an indigo, and he was definitely an indigo. He and I could talk for hours on end and just leave people around us lost.
And another factor of the indigos is the second-ray soul. They're absolutely delightful when they're children and when they're adults. They have this wonderful, almost an innocence to them that is not innocent. It's not naive. It's a desire to be loving, a desire to nourish and feed and help and just to make things better. They're not out for themselves. They're out for the collective. And I think this is what distinguishes them from people in the past, is that there's very much more a sense of collective and a sense of gathering, becoming together, and realize that we're all part of, like, we're like organs in a body, in an enormous body, an enormous sort of global physical manifestation of a being. And we're like the synapses in the brain cell, and the brain cells in the mind of the planet.
Yep. I was just saying something like that in an interview. I don't speak for me, I speak for all. There is no me, there is no particular thing that's about for my benefit or for, you know, something self-serving at all. It's like I only refer to myself as all, as a unified field. And I mean, just similar to how you see it, it's a human web of life. It's the diversity that works in harmony that's considered the oneness. And if we can just each, you know, really be ourselves and be our role and have that inner freedom, then we're uniquely different, but we're one in the sense that it affects the whole, and it affects one another. And the diversity in its harmonious state is the wholeness of this organism Gaia, and everything, you know, works without there being wars because there's differences. It's more about complementariness. It's one big mandala, each having a different thread on the whole, but each containing the whole code within one's own nature of God and Godness. But you know, we have a particular, you know, role, you know, like an animal does, but yet we're there's no separation. So yeah, I never think of myself as, it's just, there is no real sense of me. It's all.
I have an interesting question though. Let me interrupt for a moment. In Songstress 333, thank you so much. Now, Thomas in the chat room asked you a question, Laura. What do you know about the galactic light body?
The galactic light body?
Yeah.
Well, what do I know about? Well, I mean, it depends where one wants to go with it. It's, you know, a broad question in a sense. I mean, when one thinks of the galactic core, or, you know, source energy itself and its emanations, and its origins as far as manifesting world and manifesting the world that we exist in right now, I'd say the galactic light body is the highest frequency of that as far as embodying, you know, one's roots and being able to access, you know, the blueprint and the activated, you know, DNA that is not 95% kind of asleep or unused. And, you know, the light body would be, you know, that spark that we all hold, that we're all illuminating and expanding as we speak, which is a high frequency that, you know, matter is starting to catch up with. The cells in matter, the atoms, everything is starting to bring in these frequencies. And so when we're really, you know, embodying or in touch with our galactic light body, we are shifting, you know, the physical world, rising above the lower densities and therefore freeing ourselves. And so, you know, it's that connection to source rather than the archonic system and the false matrix that puts us in these sub-personalities and behaviors that are like being enslaved without knowing it. It's like being tossed a bunch of treats. Well, here's a TV and here's some junk food. Have fun, you know, and just kind of being like, you know, looking for a job and making money and living this sort of life and having your eyes closed. The galactic light body would be, you know, really seeing that that's a false system and that when one can really be in touch with that organic light, that they are transcending and awakening something that is a higher form of bliss, entertainment, pleasure, and creativity that makes us the artists of matter rather than the physical world informing us and controlling us.
Wow, thank
you. We are in charge. Yeah, we're in charge of the physical world around us and how it molds and how it responds because our physical, our spiritual beings are more illuminated than the physical matter. But you know, for a long period of time, and we're stepping out of this, the physical world has sort of been dominant and been almost superior when it's actually very inferior to our spirit nature.
Can I say something?
Certainly.
Laura.
Yeah.
You used the words right at the beginning of that last segment, archonic. I've heard Jay Widener talk about the archons, and when I heard you last talk about them, I, you know, did a little looking up. there's not that much clear information exactly what they're about. Could you give us a quick outline of who, what, where are the archons? Do they exist today? Are they in flux? Are they susceptible to this change as well? What's going on? Who? There's about 9 questions there. If you could kind of slowly piece your way through that, but just tell us about the archons if you can.
It's really just a lower system, of lower consciousness. It's a dominating force. It's a controlling force. It doesn't acknowledge, you know, the creator or source energy. It really does rule the false system, and one can trace it to the lower creator god that one sees in religion. One can, you know, trace it even to the lower alien races and their agendas, because really the lower creator god is considered an alien and basically an imposter. But, you know, he has a name and he's, you know, basically worshipped as a god, but it's a very sort of patriarchal system that's all about control and the negation of the divine feminine and the control of nature and Gaia, and we see that through technologies like HARP. And, you know, just the whole idea of, you know, going off planet or having all these backup plans where trillions of dollars are being invested into avoiding healing and nurturing the world we live in and the humanity that we live in. So the archonic system is like this veil that's been cast. And it existed before the Earth body was created, but it's not older than the creator. It's a system that once the Gaia planet was created, they were like these entities that sort of took hold. And, you know, very much like the Anunnaki, who desired to create a slave race and really wanted people to not understand their true origins. They were in competition with the creator, with the god goddess force. And so that's where one, you know, learns about myth and the tree of life and the tree of good and evil and how the primordial parents and the true creator has, you know, taken this route and this journey to, you know, like Christ, Sophia, Magdalene, you know, all these other archetypes, to help us break free, not to be worshipped, not to be saviors. That was all misrepresented just to make us powerless so that we're not activating it within ourselves, but we're looking to something else by worshiping and praying and all this stuff. When really, you know, that's a false system. The true story of them is about being liberators and about, you know, being our equals and helping us, you know, break free. And so because this false system was cast upon the planet, the true source of it all is intervening in a sense through all of us, you know, when we're awakened, through different paths and through different embodiments to, you know, help us break free of it. And these archonic forces weren't necessarily supposed to, and, you know, there are no mistakes, so I'm not saying there was a mistake, but what happened was there was a leak in the pleroma and in the aeons, which are kind of the opposite of archons, that emanated from source. And when there was a leak in that place where the God, Goddess, consciousness create worlds, it fell out and ended up being lost in the primordial sea of chaos, where it wanted to go back in and couldn't understand itself separate from that place of being able to emanate worlds and create creation. And so in that place of longing to return, and this is the myth of Sophia, you know, there was an archonic system that sort of got created from an aspect of that leaked. And that's kind of the origins of it. It's very complicated. I don't want people to get too lost in it because it is part of the source emanation that this happened. But like the lowest point of the aeonic system, closest to the border of the pleroma that leaked, you know, has a particular name. It's not really Sophia. It's just a leak, you know, and names get confusing because we don't like to necessarily think of things as deities because we have all these forces within us. It's better to look at them more as metaphors and more as like, okay, well, Sophia means wisdom and blah, blah, blah. But so the wisdom is trying to restore this planet by helping us see the difference between the archonic forces and the aeonic forces. Aeons would be more like the higher ET races, angels and guides and spirit guides that are helping us return to source. The archonic system would be anything that exists beneath the veil, including the duality and religion of heaven and hell, good and evil, right and wrong, you know, anything that is black and white and has these dualities. And so that system is expiring. It never, you know, it doesn't have the ability to last. But it's cast a temporary veil as we all take the responsibility of being like architects of creating paradise on earth. When we each, you know, embody a role and we've gone through enough lifetimes and we really know what part we want to play, then we can start to create that global transformation and global alchemy, which brings us out of this archonic system, which basically wants to control us, wants us to be enslaved, wants to hoard all the technologies and basically have agreements with ET races to use certain technologies in order to make us powerless. We feel like we need to have treaties in order to have advanced technology when really our blueprint and our true nature is beyond these technologies, where we are, you know, like I said before, able to inform matter around us and able to time travel, able to, you know, journey multidimensionally. And there's nothing wrong with these technologies except for the fact that they're in the wrong people's hands and they're being kept from us. And we need them, you know, to rebuild things. And then from there, you know, we can really step into our true nature, which is, you know, ultimate power, you know, being able to create worlds, being able to emanate that place in the beginning of the pleroma. So, yes, a mistake was made, but it ends up being a blessing because what they've done is intervened rather than destroying everything and starting over and helping people become, you know, really that same force. You know, the archons like to make us sort of human and powerless, where our true nature is to realize that our primordial parents is our true inheritance, and we have the ability to take on those traits and be that creative and be able to create, you know, through our imagination and our intention, the world around us. So archons can be considered lower ET races. It can, you know, the chief archon can be considered the lower creator god. It can be considered anything that wants to dominate and destroy and keep us from the natural flow of co-creating with source energy, with the planetary body, with the cosmos. And even the planetary bodies, the seven planets, are considered archons. Yes, there's positive traits to them, but when we think about it, we're stuck on these zodiac wheels called the Wheel of Necessity. And for this period of time while we're, you know, working duality back into unity, we are kind of given these different, you know, natal charts. We're born with a particular, you know, code. And we work ourselves out of it through learning our strengths and weaknesses and learning how to break free of the wheel. Of the wheel of karma, of the zodiac itself. So 2012 really marks a time where we will free ourselves from the wheel of necessity, the zodiac, which is slightly archonic, But like duality, you know, it also has the positive end of it, where the aeons and the archons, it's kind of like the shadow and the light and the dark. But when the light and dark is really restored in our own nature, we'll realize that the dark is like the fertile womb, like the soil where we can plant seeds and everything grows out of it, and it's a regenerative force. It's not a force where we get lost and we get controlled and we get confused. When we start to become masters, the archons are nothing. They just become composted, and we actually are just able to generate anything through our creativity and our imagination that suit us, and where true freedom is there, not dogma, not religion, not duality. And so the archons keep us veiled from this higher freedom that is completely divine, but it's not about good and evil. It's about being at a high enough frequency to not even have to think in terms of that, where you're just, you know, being, you know, a master and a creator.
Just being, indeed. Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Now, are there any resources on the web that people can go to see, to kind of get a digest, it's like the Reader's Digest version of what you were just talking about, or, you know, is there a video? Can I watch the film?
Yeah, I would suggest, Jay Widener definitely knows a lot about this, but one person in particular who I've made contact with recently, John Lamb Lash, John Lash, he has a site called metahistory.org, and he talks about all this. He's written a bunch of articles. If one, you know, Googles the Archons and John Lash or the Archons and Sophia, you know, you'll really, you know, get a big dose of what I was just talking about. And it's great because I understood this stuff just based on, you know, my weird path, but I never could organize it as well, you know, because terminologies and just, you know, and he's definitely somebody that's taken the time and I mean, he's written a bunch of books and he's absolutely amazing. He really gets it. He understands how the goddess has morphed into the physical planet, understands, you know, the difference between these races and how they're affecting us in nations and how they, you know, what pictures they jump in on and how they do affect us and manipulate us, and also, you know, the ones that are here to assist us. And I definitely recommend him. He's definitely, and Jay Widener, of course, and Jim Nichols really understands this stuff too. And Lee J. McCloskey, who people can find on Facebook, he's an artist. And I'm sorry, I'm going too quick.
Jay Widener. Okay, who was the first guy?
Oh, John Lamb, L-A-M-B as in, like, the
yeah.
lamb.
Yeah.
Lash, L-A-S-H.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and Jim okay. Nichols, who Jim. People might be familiar with.
Is that N-I-C-H-O-L-L-S?
Yes.
Jim Nichols. There we go. I'm just putting these names into the chat box so that people can Google them and the
right.
And I'll put the meta history. Brilliant. Brilliant. This is a very interesting thing. Now, can you tell me and tell us about what connections the Archons may have with the moon and the secret soldier program on the moon?
Wait, can you say that one more time?
What connection is there between the Archons, the moon, and the super soldier program on the moon, if any?
Well, you know, this is another attempt to dominate, you know, the feminine force. And I'm not coming from a place of a crazy feminist. I mean, this is, you know, the feminine nature exists within men too, and it's to create a force, obviously. It's not so much about gender. When one thinks of the moon, it's very much about intuition. It rules, you know, tides. It has a huge influence on our planet and our intuition on our emotional body. So the moon being infected and, you know, taken over and having these sort of influences on them are what really make, I mean, I think women can especially understand this. I mean, I think we all grapple with very tough emotional bodies at times, you know, whether it be, you know, dealing with our cycles or dealing with just like, you know, going berserk or just having mood swings. And men have this problem too, you know, where women are like, oh, he's got PMS. I can't believe he has PMS. You know, whatever. The point is, you know, these frequencies that we're getting from the moon, I mean, the moon is not a clear and pure vessel like it used to be. It's been, you know, pretty much, you know, really overtaken by, you know, entities that make the telepathic communications and the frequencies that we're getting very distorted and very much influenced by some level of control and force and an agenda. So when we're really tuning into intuition in our emotional bodies, a lot of times we find it's not very comfortable or very easy. And so in a way, one has to go to a higher octave and a different level of lunar forces. You're on your higher octaves of the moon, and there's other forces that connect with the moon that aren't as infected. So, I mean, I kind of recommend people to not, and the moon is also about the past and the connection with the mother. So, you know, and so when we see history and what's happened to the feminine force and you know, the way that's been treated, it's very much a metaphor. I mean, these are all connected and how our moon is affected right now. So in a sense, if people understand astrology or just tuning into their intuition, they almost have to kind of take it a step further and kind of go beyond our lunar, the moon that's revolving around our Earth right now and just, you know, understand the planet Uranus, which is about breakthroughs and, you know, revolution and breaking free. And that could be where the emotional body is aligned with, and Neptune, which is much more multidimensional and much more, you know, mystical. Because if we focus too much on our intuitive and emotional bodies, we'll find that we're really just driving to this current and just really having a struggle. So I recommend people, men and women, when they start to feel that, just to kind of, you know, tap into another celestial body, you know, because we're made up of all these forces. But the moon is particularly really, you know, been messed with, and they've been doing these programs and these manipulations in order to dominate, you know, and control. It's obviously a lot more complex than that, but, you know, these other races out there, everybody's competing for the Earth planet, and a lot of people are trying to stake this place as their home or this is where they originated, but really nobody has ownership of it. It's an emanation from source energy itself, and our goal is to have harmony and unity and to be able to connect with these races and figure out how to integrate it. Like you were saying, we're like a physical body in different organs. And right now, it's like the planet has like this cancerous, parasitic condition. And for us to heal it, we have to take the responsibility and be the immune system and access the white blood cells and take and see it as an organism, not something, you know, that this is over there and this race is over there. We have to understand that we're connected to all, and we can accept those forces within ourselves, then we can start to heal it. The archetypal patterns, the archetypal dramas, and the archonic forces, when they don't affect us personally, when we achieve mastery over it, we've done our part. We've lived our purpose. But, you know, obviously on a collective level, it's not in very good shape. And the only way to really recover it is for each of us to take responsibility in our own being, because that'll, you know, send the frequencies out and start to create conditions where they're thrown off and they're, you know, being expelled. And we're acting as an immune system that's actually ridding ourselves of this germ and disease and parasite. And they're using people, and they tried to use me, and I know they tried to use you and others to carry out this agenda, and our souls and our spirit were too strong. So, you know, this is a really good sign.
Yes. Interesting you said germ and disease, which sounded like German disease.
Right. I mean, you know, there's parts of it that aren't a disease, but when one sees imbalance, period,
yeah,
it attracts all sorts of forces. It's like, you know, when we don't wake up feeling balanced, our meridians are off, you know, we tend to attract flus. And so, I mean, just on a larger level, the races that aren't really in support of us are actually just really, you know, assisting us in transforming and waking up. Just like if a doctor says you have cancer, I mean, one has two choices. You can lay on the couch and die, or you can change your whole lifestyle and the way that you think, and you can overcome. So it becomes a blessing in disguise, but your perceptions determine, you know, how you're going to handle it. Are you a victim or are you a warrior? And I think we have this in common, that we're warriors and we're not victims. So
that's lovely. The path of the warrior, of the spiritual warrior, doesn't always appear to be the same, but there's always similar challenges that happen all along the way. Dave, how are you doing?
I'm sitting here just marveling at how you folks are filling in my lack of knowledge on so many things. There was an interesting question that was asked in the chat room about, Laura, is there anybody else in your family that's as awake and aware as you are?
Well, I mean, in their own way, I wouldn't want to, you know, put myself on a pedestal in my family. You know, everybody's different. Nobody, I mean, when I go to family gatherings, nobody talks about ETs. Nobody talks about, I mean, I mentioned, you know, the Mars thing. It's like, oh, yeah, remember Richard? You know, oops, I said his name, but that's okay. There's plenty of Richards out there. You know, oh, you know, he was an agent, and he tried to drag me to Mars, and it's just like, you know, we're just sipping champagne, like, oh, okay, you know. And it's just like, I don't, nobody in my family that I know of, cousins, sisters, aunts, uncles, have been anywhere near remotely through the kind of things that I've been through, or can really relate to it. But my grandfather, who's still alive, who's Ike's son, you know, we've had some very deep discussions about this, and he's, you know, getting really old. And I would say that he's very spot on in a way that can really, you know, does get this stuff and has really just been extremely supportive. Other family members have been too, but like I said, I haven't had the quality time. And, you know, just knowing, you know, what he's been exposed to and just, you know, just there's just this incredible affinity him and I have. I always kind of gravitate towards him when I'm at family gatherings. So I can't say I know how awake others are. It's just I haven't had the opportunity to really get into it with them. I mention these things. I ask about, you know, the treaty. What do they know about Ike and aliens? And, you know, I try and get as much information out. And I wouldn't say they seem asleep or they seem, you know, off at all. I mean, they're really, you know, it's really good people. But they just haven't had the experiences like I have that has forced me into understanding the level of things that I do on an information sort of, you know, agenda in shadow government level. But as far as, you know, my consciousness, I mean, I was definitely, you know, a kid that was really out there and, like, doing crazy weird things and just, you know, had some abilities that, you know, I can't say that those around me necessarily had, but they might have. We just didn't talk about it. I just isolated myself, and I was, you know, I was the black sheep freak that, you know, I'm surprised anybody in my family even talks to me. I'm grateful that they love me, but I always thought I was, like, I just didn't want to bother them with how weird I am.
Tweety, you're not weird by any stretch of the imagination. Believe me, I know.
Well, you guys are like home. This is like normal. We're normal to each other.
Yes, we are family. I mean, I can really feel that. I felt that the first time we spoke. And more I've gotten to the point where I can almost prove it scientifically. And it's a fantastic feeling because it's like absolute validation for, you know, you are who you think you are, who you've suspected that you are all these years, but you haven't been able to get over the cognitive dissonance that has been put onto you that says, you know, you're just this or that, you know. Because you have lived in a car means that you're worth less than somebody who lives in a big old mansion, eh?
Right. I mean, there's just something I could have, you know, there are a lot of opportunities, but, I mean, I wouldn't say, like, you know, nobody ever handed me anything. I never had a trust fund. It wasn't, like, you know, our family, even though it might have a famous name, we're not one of those, you know, trust fund families or, you know, you get anything you want. I've always been a hard worker. I've done hard labor jobs. I've worked my ass off, you know, just, you know, trying to make my own money in my own way. You know, I've had support when I've needed it because I did have kids and I was a single mother of twins. But when it came down to it, you know, I knew that I was preparing for something and that my ability to survive, I was a wilderness expedition leader. So, you know, anything from 30 to below to 110 degrees, you know, I was out there and then, you know, just living on the road without a lot of money. Instead of, you know, crying to my family, I just said, you know, I'm here to learn about my creative abilities and just the power of spirit. I'm not here to take the easy way. And I just, you know, had this stubbornness about me that made things a lot more challenging than it needed to be. And also there are times where, you know, the resources and the help wasn't there. But, you know, it's hard to explain, but I allowed myself to be highly challenged because I knew in the end it was a lot healthier for me to have that level of independence and self-sufficiency, especially in the years that are ahead. A lot of people are going to be freaking out, and I know that I can calm them and ground them because, you know, I survived off $10 for a couple months, and, you know, I know how to be in the wilderness and live. And even though I'm not saying that we're in for that, it's nice to know that I'm not going to be carrying that panic, and I can help ease people who might be letting go of a lot of luxuries and things that they've grown accustomed to. It's like, yes, you know, I grew up with some of that, but guess what? I also lived my whole adult life without any of it. And, you know, I mean, because I was so out there and traveling multidimensionally and I was not inhabiting my body for 20 years, I couldn't really be in school. I couldn't really get a normal education. My education is about my story. I mean, I ended up teaching myself based on these things that do fit into the larger picture, but it's not very much a micro sort of, you know, tangible thing that I can, you know, really put down and say, okay, math, English, you know, it's like they don't teach this shit in school.
Totally. Totally. If someone is just saying, they get 226 says, wow, Dave, that was beyond profound. They've just popped something in
the chat room, by the way.
So should we have a look-see? Where are we? We're at 5:55. Sorry, whatever time it is over here.
We have 5 minutes left.
Five minutes broadcast to go, but we can spill over if there's time, or we could end the show about in 5 minutes. Unless anybody's got, we've got no callers, and if anybody's got any more questions, I think. If there are any more questions, we can spill it over a bit. If Laura, you have the time.
I'm good. I'm fine.
Okay.
I'd like to say one thank you, guest 226.
Yes, we've had some. I don't know. Could you tell us who you are? You wish this is a 3-hour show. Yeah, so do we sometimes. Well, we have never asked for any money. We think we should continue that way, but you have to pay to get more than an hour after, actually more than half an hour from 1st of February. So our future programs will actually be half an hour, but they'll be longer than that, maybe an hour. They will actually be an hour. Okay.
I'm gonna make sure that happens for us.
We're going to go premium, so that's good, and we'll have a lot more switchboard ability, I think, and things like that. I think we also, yes, part two needed, I think. Laura, would you be happy to come back and join in with another conversation like this?
Absolutely.
It's been an absolute delight to have you with us tonight.
Laura, I love being here. It's just so comfortable.
Laura, it has been such a delight for me, not only with our talk before the show, but the fact that we're going to be able to continue it after the show.
I
Thomas,
know.
You're right on your statement you just put in the chat room.
I'll read out for you. The universe is sending out a resonating energy, changing all things within this universe. All planetary bodies are changing, and so is all of humanity. We will see portals open up sometime this year, and through them that we will see a new heaven and new earth. At the right time, we shall step off old Mother Earth and step into our new galactic or light energy body. Old Mother Earth shall do what she is supposed to do and turn into a star, it says here. So,
yay.
Yeah.
So we go with that. Is that where that? Can you tell us where that's from, Thomas? Is this something that you've brought there? And do you have your
have
own
90
show?
Seconds left.
Okay. Well, I think we should thank Laura Magdalena Eisenhower for an hour of her precious time, and for Dave Corso over in Pahrump, Nevada. And Laura in California, and Jeremy, me, here in Scotland, UK. Yes, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. No, it's 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, 1 minute left.
So bless you all. Thank you very much for attending. And there may be a little bit more on the archive, so you never know. It's been fine working for you this evening.
It has been
my
honor and my pleasure to host this show, not only with Jeremiah, but to have this lovely and beautiful Laura Magdalena Eisenhower as our esteemed guest.
It's been an honor and pleasure to be in your company and to be on the show, and I thank you so much for having me, and I can't wait to come back. Really, it's awesome.
And next week we're going to have Sam and George with me and JP and hopefully Jeremiah.
That would be a really... This
Ten
is
seconds.
I think the energy is great. Enjoy it. Enjoy the love. Feel the love pouring out. It's great.
Three.
So we're still in the archive, and but the people are not hearing us anymore.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that was really
fun.
Yeah.
Continue
so,
on
are there anything you wish to add? Yes. Well, shall we end the show now and let people pick up on the archive if they missed the beginning?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I will just do that job here. This is a little thing that I have to click, and it's going to take a little while for the thing to come up. And where's the switchboard? There's the switchboard. Oh. Please call in before attempting this command. Right, okay, well, Dave, you're going to have to drop your call to them.
All right, I'll pick you up on Skype.
Okay, mate. God bless.
Thank you. Bye. Same to you.
Bye.